Whoopee-tie-i-o, rocking to and fro, back in the saddle again.
And now it's time for this morning's history unit. There were no Lake Washington, Lake Union fireworks this year or last year, and Seafair and Bumbershoot are not going to be back until 2022. But the Evergreen State Fair in Monroe is scheduled to return later this summer. And our resident historian Felix Bunnell checked in on preparations for the fair and even got a hold of the secret recipe for its signature drink. Felix is brought to us by the Lake Washington Windows and Doors. Felix.
Morning, Dave. Yeah, less than a month from now, the second biggest fair in the state in terms of attendance will be back in the saddle after skipping last year due to COVID, like pretty much everything else. Now, the fairgrounds are on about 200 acres along Highway 2 at the intersection of State Route 522, which is where the fair has been held since 1949. That was a big year. Along with the new fairgrounds, Highway 2 between Snohomish and Monroe had a major upgrade. It's also when they started calling what had been the Snohomish County Fair the Evergreen State Fair. Now, before that, before 1949, the fair moved around quite a bit. It began in Snohomish way back in 1874, moved to Monroe in the early 1900s, and to Granite Falls in 1916. It wasn't held for most of the 30s during the Great Depression and World War II, but then started up again near downtown Monroe in 1945 with a 4-H-focused event called Cavalcade of the Valleys. Very post-war kind of optimistic spirit. I spoke with Jeremy Husby yesterday. He's manager of the fair and the year-round fairgrounds for the Snohomish County. He and his staff are busy right now getting ready for the vendors, the 4-H kids, the animals, and fingers crossed for the crowds. And as we heard Gene Autry singing a moment ago, the clever theme for this year's Evergreen State Fair is Back in the Saddle.
I think it was one of our park planners came up with the theme, and it just fit really well, back in the saddle again. You know, we were a year off, and now we're back in the saddle, and it kind of meshes with our community kind of country feel and really explains how a lot of us feel, that we fell off. We fell off the horse, and we're going to get right back up on it, and we're going to ride proud.
Now, Jeremy Husby told me that the vendors and staff will all be masked up this year, and the Evergreen State Fair has their well-ventilated spaces and everything you'd expect for a big fair. Carnival rides and games, monster trucks, concerts, car races, demolition derby, and
our animals, of course, that's what we're really known for, is having just a really good lineup of animals. Our fair food, scones, purple cow, our stage and roving entertainment. We have a lumberjack show, which is really, really popular.
Now, I understood everything that Jeremy Husby said there, except for one two-word phrase.
Purple cow.
A purple cow. Whoops. Is a...
Now, at first I played along. I pretended to know what he meant, but I had to ask. He explained a purple cow is a popular ice cream drink that's only available at the Evergreen State Fair, but he wouldn't tell me the recipe. He did tell me it's sold at a booth operated by a nonprofit group called the Snohomish County Dairy Women as a fundraiser for their Dairy Ambassador Outreach Program and for other projects that support dairy farms and families. Now, agriculture in Snohomish County is still the backbone of the Evergreen State Fair. And for the past 18 years or so, the dairy woman running the booth and the entire Purple Cow operation has been a woman named Carrie Neff.
A purple cow is a blackberry float. It's got blackberry ice cream, blackberry syrup, and 7-Up. It's not really a secret recipe. You don't have my blackberry syrup, but it's not well hidden.
So Carrie Neff told me the Purple Cow debuted at the fair in 1960. It was the invention of two dairy women named Mary Lou Lane and Ellen Dodge and their respective husbands. And the Snohomish County dairy women had planned to celebrate their Purple Cow's 60th anniversary at last year's fair, but we all know how that went. So this year is a bit of a delayed celebration of the popular drink, which sells for about $5 a piece. And just how popular is the Purple Cow?
We have people that come every day for them. We have people who say, I've never had one, but I hear they're really good. We have people that come running up saying, I have to have my purple cow. And they come first thing when they get there. And there are the same people who come running up the last day of the fair saying, I need one more before you're gone.
Now, I have to admit, I have never heard of this before, but it sounds like everybody up in Snohomish County knows what it is. Now, in case they don't, now I know it's still breakfast time, but I asked Carrie Neff to describe for the radio audience just what a purple cow actually tastes like.
It sounds very sweet, but it's actually quite refreshing. Almost everybody asks what a purple cow is. You tell them and they kind of make a face, and the ones who try, most people will try it and most people will say, wow, that really is good. It sounded too sweet, but... And every 13th purple cow is free.
Now, that last part's pretty cool. She kind of threw that in there. The person making the purple cows keeps a tally, For every 13th drink she makes, and it's usually a she rings a bell indicating that that one is free for that customer. If that customer bought one, that one's free. If they bought 10, that one of that 10 is free. And Carrie Neff said her son is among the people who used to try to jockey in line to try to be number 13. But you can't predict because someone might buy four, someone might buy six, someone might buy one. So it's kind of a folly to try to line up to get a free one. And the Snohomish County dairy women will sell thousands of purple cows over the run of the fair. A lot of it depends on attendance and weather, like any outdoor event. It did rain on the fair back in 2013, and fair manager Jeremy Husby told me that that was the only year in recent memory where attendance actually dipped a little. He said back in 2019, the fair drew a record 355,000 people. They aim to come close to that number this year. When it comes to weather, though, the fair people seems like they can be a little superstitious.
We try not to even mention the word rain. It's kind of unspoken around our office that you just don't even bring it up.
Yeah, and you know, the purple cow thing. Do you remember that poem, Dave? Do you remember the poem when you were a little schoolboy a long time ago?
The one that says, "I'd rather see than be one"?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's where the name for it comes from. It's a poem from 1895. I never saw a purple cow. I never hope to see one. But I can tell you anyhow, I'd rather see than be one.
See than be one.
Yeah, yeah. So it's sort of this old-time Americana thing. Perfect name for a drink like this at the fair. I've never had one. I'm going to have one this year. To find them, you have to go to the fair, which is starts on August 26th. You'll go to booth number 613, which is over by the animal barns. The fair runs from the 26th through Labor Day. They are taking a day off in the middle of the fair. That Wednesday, September 1st, is a dark day for kind of cleaning things up and resetting, giving people a break because there is this sort of extra measures in place because of the fact we're still dealing with COVID. But it's a great fair, definitely worth a visit a little bit later on this summer.
Okay, so what is the secret recipe? You said you got the secret recipe to the purple cow.
Yeah,
what's the ingredient that makes it so special?
You know, I think it's actually it's the 7-Up because
7-Up.
Depending on who has the contract, because they have to actually make it with Sprite this year because I think Coke has but you have a blackberry ice cream, blackberry syrup, and 7-Up, and it's like a blackberry float that looks kind of purple. It does sound very sweet. I don't know if I believe Carrie Neff when she says it isn't as sweet as it really sounds.
Yeah.
And it's way too early in the morning to actually taste it here live on the air. But I definitely want to.
So it's not like they beat an egg into it or anything like that.
You know, I asked her about an egg specifically. I said, "Is there a special kind of purple cow, like a golden cow that has like that they only make for certain VIPs?" But she said, "There's nothing like that. It's all just there's one kind of purple cow. You only get it for a total of 16 days when the fair's open, and for a car show in the spring and the fall.
Yeah.
A very special drink for a limited time only. Kind
just
of bizarre.
Like Brigadoon. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's gone.
The Brigadoon of ice cream drinks.
That's exactly right. Felix Bunnell. All his features are at mynorthwest.com. Thanks, Felix.
Thanks, Dave.
This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Heather Bosch is in for Colleen and Chris Sullivan. Let's take you now to Tokyo and CBS correspondent Steve Futterman. Of course, the big news is Simone Biles. What can you tell us about what she is going through, Steve?
Well, listen, it's obviously a very difficult time for her. She has now announced that she is not going to take part in the Thursday all-around competition. That's really the most prestigious event in gymnastics for women. If you win that, which Simone Biles did 5 years ago in Rio, you are basically the greatest woman gymnast in the world. Many people feel she's still that way, but she is talking about these mental health challenges, so she is not going to compete in that. Obviously, we know she withdrew in the middle of the team competition the other night, and she discussed very candidly the issues she's dealing with, not in great detail, but in the basics. So it's a very interesting thing. This has become sort of a subplot to the Olympics. You're talking about issues of mental health with some of the top athletes in the world right now.
Okay, but she is still in the Olympics, right? Will she still do an individual performance?
That is up to her. She is still entered in the four individual apparatuses, which are set for Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Whether she will take part, we don't know. In the statement issued by USA Gymnastics, they basically said that will be determined. So it sounds like she's thinking it through right now. She's meeting with people, we are led to believe, you know, people who deal with this type of issue, professionals, and we'll see if she's able to do it.
In terms of the atmosphere there, I know there were quite a number of people in Japan who thought this event ought to be canceled because of the threat of spreading COVID. Have they been able to keep any kind of disease spread under control?
We actually don't know. We are seeing right now, today, every day, it seems the last few days, record number of new cases in Tokyo today, more than 3,100. This is an all-time high for new cases. Now, we aren't seeing in Tokyo serious ramifications as far as massive influx of people into hospitals, but the cases are quite disturbing. Whether these are directly connected with the Olympics, I think people seem to think no, but that's going to take some time for the health experts to determine. There is some concern that there will be even an additional spike in the next few weeks because you've had thousands and thousands of people enter the country. Were they carrying with them the COVID disease? We just don't know.
But no breakout among the athletes?
No. There's been, obviously, some athletes have tested positive. You've seen some of the high-profile ones disclose it. But nothing major. No super spreader. No big pocket of new cases amongst the athletes or people involved with the Olympics.
Okay, we saw Katie Ledecky dominating the freestyle yesterday. A pretty impressive performance. Who else are we on the lookout for in the coming days?
Well, Caleb Dressel, he is going to compete in the men's 100-meter freestyle. That's sort of like the 100-meter dash of swimming. He is someone to keep an eye on. And Ledecky is going to be back. She has a great race coming up this weekend. She lost to this amazingly great Australian freestyle swimmer. Her name is Ariane Titmus. She has won two gold medals already in races that Ledecky was competing in, the 200-meter freestyle, 400-meter freestyle. Ledecky these days is better at the longer distances, so they have a matchup in the 800-meter freestyle, and I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, track and field begins this weekend. We'll be looking for that. And obviously, the subplot of Simone Biles. Will she compete on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday when they have these individual apparatuses taking place?
I know there's been some speculation on how the lack of a cheering crowd influences the athlete's performance. But based on some of the times I'm seeing, just having the competition there in the next lane of the pool seems to be incentive enough. What's your impression?
In the pool, I think it's been fine. Listen, many of these athletes over the years, they've competed before small crowds. Swimming is not like a baseball, football, basketball, where you draw massive crowds. You do during the Olympics. You do during maybe world championships, but your other meets, not that big. You have the parents there, the brothers, the sisters, the coaches. So this is sort of like one of those more personal, intimate type meets. You do have fellow athletes there. You do have the coaches there, the support staff. So they are hearing cheering from their compatriots. Once they're in the pool, they want that gold medal. I think that's what all they're thinking about. I don't think when they're actually in the race itself, it's really making that much difference.
CBS correspondent Steve Futterman at the Olympics in Tokyo. Thanks, Steve.
Great to talk with you, Dave.
And the King County prosecutor is hiring after getting more help than expected to address the massive backlog of cases which were put on hold due to the pandemic. Let's go live now to Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott. Hello, Hannah.
Good morning, Dave. Yeah, so you remember we talked yesterday about the money that was needed to deal with the thousands of backlog cases, from violent criminal cases to civil cases and all of that going on in King County Court, largely due to the pandemic when everything had to shut down. The number we were getting early going in yesterday was $31 million that would be split again between the prosecutor's office, the defender's office, and then the actual superior and district courts. In the end, it ended up being more than $42 million, which was a big boost for many of those departments. Jeannie Cole Wells, the council budget chair, explained why she added the money.
The eighth COVID budget is appropriating $240 million for the Eviction Protection and Rental Assistance Program, including a very fortunate amount of $177 million received from the state. But in comparison, $41 million for addressing the backlog in our legal system. A balanced approach means we have a duty to fund the public health response and other critical county operations, and that includes a functioning legal system.
Now, she said she had some really interesting numbers about some of the violent crimes and things that are on hold, and explained this data.
If we are unable to provide adequate funding to the courts, Families awaiting decisions around custody and other important matters will not be able to settle and move on with their lives. Victims of physical and sexual assault and domestic violence will remain unable to take vital steps in their recovery if they are seeking justice through the system. Currently, there are over 400 sexual assault victims, the average age being 16 years old, waiting their case to move forward.
That number I had not heard before. That's an astronomical number for those folks to be waiting. And then we also, of course, have murder cases, some 200. The no vote on the county council was from Germay Zahalai. And what he said was it's because of the needs that he's been hearing from his constituents on what this money should have been spent on.
They need more of these specific federal funds to go toward meeting basic needs, the lack of which is often a driving force behind people coming to our court system in the first place.
And then there was also that, you know, there's the big kind of driving factor for everything that the county council has been doing as of late is that criminal justice reform, right? Do we really want to invest in more of the prosecution side of things at all? And they do because of those sexual assault victims and some of the other victims we've heard about. Dan Satterberg, our King County prosecutor, on the sidelines and very excited when he heard the numbers and the data.
Well, you know, the pandemic through right now has been a real stress test on the entire justice system. And we've never stopped filing cases. And there's certainly a lot of violent crime going on right now that we are responding to. But we haven't been able to work through the numbers of cases that we normally would. And so the reinforcements that the county council has given us today are what we need to pass that stress test and to do justice in every one of these cases. They're all serious cases.
Here's what the money will do for him.
We need to add about 60 to 80 people in the next 6 months or so. And so we're actively seeking good people who want to come do justice. And we will staff up and expect this to last about 3 years or so. To get back to some level of functionality that resembles what we looked like before COVID. But we'll find a way to keep the good people that want to come work for us too. But in addition to all of this backlog, we have, of course, a whole bunch of resentencing cases that we've been required to do also. And of course, the Blake case means 50 years worth of drug convictions have to be remedied. It's a remarkable time in the criminal justice system. There are a lot of pressures on them.
The Blake decision, for just to remind everybody, is the state Supreme Court decision that basically threw out our simple drug possession law, and the legislature fixed that, basically creating a system where there's mandatory diversion at least twice for everybody caught with small amounts of drugs statewide. So each individual, and then they have to go back because it's retroactive. You have to go back and recalculate all of these sentences, which is just having a huge impact on courts all over the state. Yesterday, the King County Council added another $20 million in these federal dollars for that effort, and about $5 million of that is going to the prosecutor's office. So all told, he says he is going to be looking in the next 6 months to hire between 80 and 100 new staff members, and wow, that hiring sign is out.
Well, this will be a remarkable task for all human resources departments, and certainly the one prosecutor's office is out right now looking for good people who want to come work for us, both attorneys, victim advocates, legal assistants, paralegals. We need them all. And I think people will respond. It'd be a great way to start a career, to do really important work like resolving felony backlog cases. So I if we don't get the money, we can't go out and test the market. I think we're going to be able to find good people who want to be part of our team.
So that it was very, very good news. We also heard yesterday in this whole budget, which was all told about $390 million, again, federal COVID dollars that they were allocating here, that they put almost $250,000. They approved for a King County Sheriff's Office recruiter position. Now, that's an administrative position, but it's to help with the massive shortage of deputies they have in King County, which is, I think, 54 vacancies right now in that sheriff's department. And there's so much turmoil over there right now because Missy Jo Hankman is, of course, on her way out. They're going to have an appointed sheriff at the beginning of the year and that whole process. So they want to make sure, especially given the violence we've seen in the last weekend, that there's plenty of law enforcement to answer all these calls.
Good. So the big help wanted sign is out. I'm glad to see the federal money is going towards things that governments have from time immemorial been expected to do, administer justice and create a safe environment for the public. So the last time you and I talked about this, we were talking about like a backlog of many years in the court system. So does this reduce that now?
This gets us back to where we were before the pandemic. In 3 years. Yeah, roughly.
That's still a long time, especially if you've got a case pending. I mean, like a custody case, the kid's growing up. 3 years is a long time.
Yes, and he, you know, they are all of the different departments going to try to address this as quickly as they can, and it depends on how quickly each of them can hire. There was some concern from the Department of Defense, so basically I think the public defenders, the defense attorneys, that they were concerned that they wouldn't, even if they had more money, be able to hire as many people as they would need to get through some of this. So there's some concern that it's going to favor kind of the prosecutors. Whatever the case, there's more than 200 murder cases that we're talking about that absolutely, you know, those folks are waiting for some some justice. So hopefully sooner than later.
Hannah Scott. Thanks, Hannah.
You bet.
A pair of high school students are teaming up to create a life-changing invention. Thanks to a challenge from their teacher, they're now helping a father enjoy the simple pleasure of taking a stroll with his family. CBS's Chip Reed has your daily dose of kindness brought to you by Heritage Homecraft.
When Phoenix King was born 4 months ago, his parents, Jeremy and Chelsea, faced a difficult road ahead.
My husband, Jeremy, had brain surgery just over 3 years ago to remove a brain tumor, which left him with some physical challenges, some physical disabilities.
One big question, how could he safely take Phoenix for a walk? Chelsea, a teacher at Bullis, a private school in Maryland, contacted the head of the school's technology lab. He presented the challenge to his students, including Jacob Zlatnitsky and Ibenka Espinoza, who both hope to study astrophysics in college.
What was the best part about coming up with this design and seeing that it worked?
Just seeing the smiles on their faces.
And the relief that, oof, it worked.
The Wee Stroll, as they call it, won 2 international design awards.
Pull it nice and taut.
This is really secure.
Yes, and they actually, I think they dumped a bunch of center blocks in it and actually, you know, weight tested it at the school a couple times, which I think the kids were really into.
For Jeremy, it's a godsend.
I never thought I'd be able to do something like this safely. I feel wonderful. I feel ecstatic.
Ecstatic over the simple pleasure of taking a stroll with his family. Chip Reed, CBS News, Potomac, Maryland.
It's the simple things.
7:48, and that takes us to G. Scott from the G. and Ursula Show. I wanted to talk with you about this Mariners trade, which apparently nobody saw coming. But you remember Monday's spectacular game, right, with the grand slam come from behind.
Phenomenal.
Kendall Graveman was the closer. He was the winning pitcher in that victory over the Astros. And now the Mariner who beat the Astros is playing for the Astros. He's been traded. And then at the same time, Abraham Toro, who was playing for the Astros and hit a home run for them on Monday, is now playing for the Mariners. And this all apparently took the locker room by surprise. And here's what Graveman had to say after the trade.
I understand the business of this game. I understand how things can happen quickly. And I was a little bit shocked.
Yeah. And I get that it's a business. You get that it's a business. But this takes it to the pretty much up to the edge, don't you think?
It does. But if you get it's a business, I get it's a business, and you listening right now, you understand it's a business. Why do we always need a reminder? Right? Like, it is a business. The Mariners. And well, here's why we kind of need a reminder. Let's just get down to brass tacks. The Mariners are the Mariners. They haven't been to the playoffs in 20 years. There's somebody, you might have a 20-year-old child right now that don't know what it's like for the Mariners to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So let's get right to it. Some of the greatest moments that are talked about with the Mariners are still the 95 slide. Now, with that being said, Monday, spectacular. Grand slam, come from behind against the Houston Astros. a team in which has your number all the time in the division. You've been playing great baseball lately. You're 9 games above .500. The Mariners are 1 game out of the wild card, and you trade your best reliever, one of the best relievers in baseball. In return, you get a, now this ain't cool, but you get a 37-year-old reliever. In return, I'm not trying to be ageist here, but you do. Imagine if in 2012, the Seahawks would have traded Marshawn Lynch to the Niners during the season. I mean, I guess you got to wait for the full picture and say that Jerry DePoto, the general manager, like, hey, you know, give him time, give him time. Well, while he gets time and we try to figure out the full picture, if you're a Mariner fan, this sucks.
Yeah,
this
sucks. Imagine. If we're going to go into comparisons, imagine if Katie Ledecky, after winning her gold medal, was traded to the Russians. That would be crazy, right?
That was a good one. That was a good one with the swimming. I just wasn't excited with your analogy right there.
I see.
No, I'm just kidding. That was good. No, I mean, well, you know, you caught me off guard. Your boy don't really watch a lot of swimming.
I understand.
I'll admit it, but very well done.
He's a really, really good swimmer.
Okay, my bad. You got me.
Okay.
But I did the best I could. But this deal right here, this is one of those. One thing that I haven't seen, you see on social media all the time. You hear or see same old Mariners, and you hadn't seen that lady because it kind of felt different. Well, this trade right here makes you feel like same old Mariners. And as the fans of Mariners, people that love this team, they're hurt. And I imagine to think that the clubhouse, the teammates are kind of hurt too. They're probably thrown, you know, off guard. But I want to break this down and put it into layman's terms. And let's, you know, I always like to take it from the pro athlete and just take it to common everyday life. Life's hard, man. It really is. Life throws us all curveballs. You wake up one day, it's sunny. You wake up the next, it's raining. You never can predict the weather. You never can predict what's going to happen in life. Athletes go through and have hard times just like we do, sometimes even harder. A lot of times we think that money or these athletes, just because they have $1 million contracts or $10 million contracts, that they don't have $100 problems, right? Because they do. They have kids. They have families. They have moms, dads. They have wives. They have cousins and all of their family members. One minute your kid's going to school, or one day your kid's going to school or has neighbors in a neighborhood. He's playing with his friends, and the next they have to pack up and leave. These things happen. And so we have to be reminded that this is a business. And I'm bringing this way full circle, and I'm being serious about this topic, because these are things that I talk about with my son, my oldest son. Mm-hmm. I tell him these things like, hey, you do understand if you do continue down this road, and God forbid you do.
Now he's on track to go to the NFL, right?
Yeah, he's in college. But if you do go down this road, do understand something. That is a different world. It is a different type of beast. It is if you will, sometimes we all trip and fall. Sometimes you trip and fall over a little crack in the concrete, maybe, or a little rock on the ground. Sometimes you get up that high, that trip and fall feels like you're falling off a tower. So that is the tough part of it. And so, yes, a business is a business, and they have to continue to be reminded of that. I just wasn't expecting this business call.
Yeah. G. Scott with Ursula at 9 o'clock, Cairo Radio. Thank you, G.
My man.
And this hour of Seattle's Morning News brought to you by Wilcox Family Farm. Let's get to the most important stories of the morning, and we'll start with some sort of local business news. Boeing is making money again. It just reported its first quarterly profit since 2019. How'd they pull that off? Let's go to Chris Sullivan again. Chris?
That's a very good question, Dave. You know, it's not a ton of money, but after the last 2 years, this is a very welcome sight for our region and the company. Boeing reporting a $567 million profit in Q2. Not chump change, but nothing like the company used to see. But compared to the $2.4 billion loss in Q2 last year, this is a very good day for Boeing. Revenues for the quarter, $17 billion, a 44% increase over 2020. Year to date, revenues are up 12%. 5% over last year at about $32 billion. Once again, it's the defense and space side leading the financial charge, which commercial airplanes division dragging things down. Boeing delivered only 79 commercial airplanes in the second quarter, 156 for the year. Those are vast improvements over 2020, but not what the company is used to. Only 14 of those deliveries are 787s, down from 22 last year. The company, as you know, halted deliveries of the plane as it tries to figure out a laundry list of manufacturing issues. There's also virtually no demand for that twin-aisle airplane right now as international travel continues to struggle. Another piece of positive news from Boeing CEO David Calhoun. He says the job cuts are coming to an end. The company had planned to thin down to about 130,000 global employees, plans to hold steady right about where they are right now, which is at about 140,000.
That is the really good news. So
yeah, definitely.
So the plans to shrink the payroll are on hold.
Right now, yeah. Right now, he says, Calhoun's saying they're in a pretty good spot, they think, and so they're going to plan to hold. No plans to rehire at this point, but no plans to maybe lose another 10,000 company-wide. And as we know, Washington took a really big chunk out of that cut down last year, where they cut down at least 25,000 employees worldwide.
All right. Very good news. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you'll never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.